From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
You're listening to Money Talk for September 10th, 2021. The Brewers are spending the weekend at the Mistake on the Lake in lovely Cleveland, Ohio. And because of Hurricane Ida, the Packers kick off their season with the New Orleans Saints in hot and sweaty Jacksonville, Florida. A feisty 48-year-old woman in Vietnam protested her mandatory COVID-19 quarantine. She didn't go quietly into custody, nor did she get dressed quietly. She held off the cops for 2 hours with just a board while she was buck naked. Sounds like the police weren't in any hurry to put her in an orange jumpsuit either. A woman in the United Kingdom didn't know she was pregnant until 4 hours before she gave birth. She thought the extra pounds were just pandemic lockdown weight. Okay then, so what's my excuse? San Francisco has seen a small rise in their annual murder rate. In an effort to combat the problem, the city will begin a rather unconventional program in October. They'll offer high-risk individuals $300 a month not to shoot anyone. That's kind of a strange idea, but not shooting someone does seem like a good way to supplement your income. Finally, our strange headline of the week comes from the Miami Herald. Man with nothing to declare at customs had 55 tortoises stuffed in his pants. Well, I do declare. Around the table today, we've got Kyle Tedding, Chris Evers, Brian Kilb, Mike Helzel, and looking back at the week, here's Bob Landis.
Well, thank you, Jason. Pretty ugly week. Best thing we can say about it, markets were closed on Monday for Labor Day. That saved us maybe from losing even more. So the stock set a record high a week ago Thursday, kind of a distant memory. Stock sold off every trading day the markets were open this week. Week overall, the NASDAQ lost 1.6%, shedding 248 points to close at 15,115. S&P 500 lost 1.7%, losing 77 points to close at 4,459. Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up 762 points, shedding 2.2%. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 34,607. Still way up for the year. NASDAQ up a whopping 17.8%. Broader markets up 19.9%. What's not to like? Now Dow is up 14.6%. You know, Brian, we're starting to see news that economy is slowing down a tad. We all knew it was coming. You know, even airplanes don't accelerate forever. Some point to hit cruising altitude. But the Beige Book came out Wednesday, right? Showed that their regional survey of economic conditions around the country, that the economy is slowing down. And it seems to me that it's just a natural pullback after basically having gone straight up since the end of March last year.
You know, Bob, I read today 214 days since the last 5% correction.
Last October.
Up 33% since then. So, yeah, I think, you know, my favorite thing is always to go back and remind people of the context. So, you know, you get a bad week, a couple of percentage points down on top of 33% over the last few months. And I think we got to kind of keep things in perspective. And I don't know. I mean, we knew it wasn't going to be perfect, so we're having some challenging information, having some challenges in terms of the economic growth. But I also think there's plenty of good news still to keep this thing from getting too bad. So maybe we fall into the middle there somewhere, which isn't necessarily a bad place. Might regain a little bit of comfort in terms of where valuations are heading and provide some more rational perspective on where we're going here.
Kyle, what's your take on the week?
Well, I think important to remember that stock markets are a method of price discovery, right? That the whole idea of buying and selling stocks is that you find somebody else that thinks it's worth a little more or a little less. And what we learned this week is that there's maybe a few more people that think it's worth less than it was before. And so I think it's really healthy when we get these kinds of moves. It seems scary sometimes to look at a 4 or 5 day stretch where the markets just can't seem to regain any ground. But I think the reality is, you know, you look at the year-to-date numbers and say, okay, well, maybe we're willing to deal with the occasional week where we're down one or two, just given that things have been so good. But I think the other part is that this is also a helpful process to go through down the road, because it helps to identify some points of strength for the market, right? That if we can find a floor in a move like this, it means that maybe there's a little more support than what we thought before, right? The constant concern has been when's that correction going to come? And so, you know, seeing a little bit of a sell-off the last 4 or 5 days, but if we can put an end to this here rather quickly, I think it would be a sign that perhaps there's more of a floor than what many people thought. And I think the reverse of that is if this does continue on for a little while, you start to think it could persist. You start to think, of course, then that 5% number, Brian, that you mentioned is out there, that 10% number that we haven't seen for even longer. And of course, those are all short-term concerns, short-term moves. But I do think it is helpful in the grand scheme of things to see these kinds of pullbacks.
You know, I also think too, Cal, that if you kind of look ahead a little bit farther and you think, well, there are some problems caused by growing too much, you know, and maybe you're cutting back on a few of those problems, right? And maybe a little bit of something in the middle there allows us for something more extended down the road.
Chris, let's talk about the jobs market here for a little bit. A week ago today, the government announced that job creation had plunged last month. We come into this week, and we had the announcement on Wednesday that a huge number of jobs that are available. And, you know, it strikes me as kind of an imbalance that is going to be hard to correct, because it's not a supply issue, it's a demand issue. Got all these people that are not in the workforce and are choosing, for various reasons, not to reenter. And I think that's going to be key to this economy coming into the new year. You know, just how will that get corrected? Will employers finally throw in the towel and start paying more? Will people in hospitality and food service say, I'm not going back, and find jobs in other industries? Will they come back with maybe better protection? You know, the job market's clearly unbalanced now in ways that really we've never seen. And I think even for the pros, hard to interpret, and more importantly, hard to forecast.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you point to some of that imbalance in the labor market. You know, that's exactly what the Fed was pointing out in their Beige Book, you know, this week, was pointing at. There is some wage growth on the lower level of the labor market in terms of wages. And also at the same time, they're having a really hard time bringing people back to work. There's been increases in retirement, specifically in the healthcare industry, where a lot of nurses and doctors have said, you know, I've gone through a lot in the last year and a half, and maybe I've made some money on my investments. I'm gonna call it a wraps here. So we see this combination of two things. To your point, the labor market report last week showed nowhere near the jobs creation we were hoping for and we're anticipating. Meanwhile, this week, we see 10.9 million new job openings, or job openings that are available, which exceeds the amount of unemployed individuals, which points to that, you know, dichotomy of the jobs that are available might not be jobs that people want to take, nor are people maybe comfortable going back to those jobs where they still struggle with childcare and concerns over, you know, the new Delta variant.
Well, and Chris, I think as we look at the fall, that's going to really be key for the labor market. With so many kids back in school this year, you have a number of parents, for example, who maybe couldn't work or didn't want to work while their children were home for the summer, while their children were home last year, who may be looking to fill some of those jobs. And so if you start to see some of those mismatches in what we want to do versus what's available, you start to see maybe some better pay that Bob mentioned, especially on some of those lower earning jobs, all of a sudden we might see some of that filled. And so I think this particular stretch of the next couple of months is going to be pretty critical for the labor market.
Be pretty interesting to see what happens here this coming month as the federal government ends the extended unemployment benefits for the states that ended them early. There was really no significant change in employment trends. So I think that'll be something to pay attention to. Mike, a lot going on these days. What's your take on current events?
Well, first I want to apologize to everyone for the market going down, because when I went on vacation, the market went up, and I come back to the office and it goes down. So if you guys don't mind, I put in for the next 4 weeks off to help everybody out. No, current events, just to kind of piggyback on what you guys are saying about the jobs and kind of bringing people back, I've noticed a lot of different things, like what employers are doing to get people in. I mean, I drove by Starbucks the other day, and they said now hiring, and they're giving away free Spotify accounts and like 401ks, and then Amazon is paying college for people. So it's just interesting to see what employers are doing to try and get people back to work. But in terms of current events and what I've been talking to a lot of people about, it's same thing for a while. It's a lot of people have COVID on their mind, what it's going to mean for the markets, what it's going to mean for them. And it's kind of interesting how those, you know, sometimes they dovetail together because they're getting close to retirement and what that means. So it's kind of the things I've been talking to them about, especially older clients, in regards to COVID and the market and the up and the volatility of the market, I should say, is we've been talking a lot about RMDs and like taking them and taking the winners off the table, like you said, in case we haven't had a correction in a while. So take the winners off the table now with the RMDs. And those have just been interesting conversations we've had in the relation of the markets and COVID and where everything is going.
Kyle, you and I spent some time yesterday talking about life after COVID. You know, I think it's important at this point to do your very best to try to imagine what life is going to be like once they bring COVID under control. I'm not able, of course, to forecast when that might happen, whether it's a year from now or maybe even 2 years from now. But one thing I'm absolutely certain about is that the big money is going to start peeking into the future, and they're going to align their money with what they think is going to be life without COVID. My guess is it's going to look a lot like life before COVID, with maybe a couple of minor adjustments. But I think it's really important at this point in the cycle, now that, you know, COVID cases, hospitalizations, COVID deaths are surging, and unfortunately in low vaccinated states primarily. And it'll eventually play out. We know that that'll happen. Hopefully the president's vaccination efforts that he announced yesterday afternoon will have an impact, requiring employers with 100 or more workers to get them vaccinated. But I think, you know, the point is this will eventually end. You know, it feels like, year and a half of this, and it's getting worse now. But I think it's important to focus on whether it's a year, year and a half, or 2 years, it will end. And corporate profits will continue to roll in, and we're going to go back to what we used to do and still do, is focusing on earnings and interest rates. But as a segue, you know, Brian, I saw this morning that mergers and acquisitions are on pace to hit a record. So this is a big number, folks. $1.8 trillion just in the United States for mergers and acquisitions. Now, the reason why I think this is important is that people that control mass amounts of money are placing their bets. And they're saying, hey, this COVID's going to be over at some point in time, and we're trying to beef up our organizations, and we're spending money significantly. You know, it's the biggest number since they started keeping track of this 25 years ago. And I'm encouraged by that.
You know, Bob, combined the last two thoughts, because I think you're raising a very critical point, and one of these longer-term cyclical points that I love to focus on. So special purpose acquisition companies way up, IPOs way up, mergers and acquisitions way up, because there's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of money that people have accumulated cheap. I think one of the things about COVID, too, is, you know, capitalism is built on disruption, and we figure a lot of things out when we're forced to. Sometimes we don't when we don't have to, you know, and I think a lot of this money right now is going to the smaller companies, these research and development, new ideas, new ways to do things. And there's a lot of money to fund a lot of those new ideas. And I think one of the things that's going to come out of this whole thing is a lot of new enterprises that have a lot of new ideas and a lot of new ways to get things done. You know, and even some of the things like healthcare, I think we're going to reinvent some of the way we deliver healthcare. And that's good for capitalism. It's good for companies that supply that kind of stuff. So I think your point, as we look past COVID, is perhaps a renewed interest in private equity and private money, special purpose acquisitions, IPOs, mergers, any way that we can get people to be more more creative and change the way we do things for the better.
Because it's absolutely clear to me that big money, big business, they're planning on a COVID recovery here, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they're not sitting on the cash like we used to see sometimes. They're spending it. $1.8 trillion is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Just here in the U.S., and it's twice that globally. Hey, Kyle, let me change the subject here just for a minute. You know, we all read the article in the Wall Street Journal about Evergrande, the huge Chinese real estate firm. Looks to me like the wheels are falling off the cart there. And the Chinese, they're talking tough, you know, still talking about, oh, let them go down. But it's starting to raise some eyebrows globally with the real potential of them defaulting. They've got 800 current construction projects that they're starting to walk away from. You know, might just be a ripple in the pond here, but that has the potential to be an eye-opener.
Yeah, you know, I think there are always these types of events, and especially events of this magnitude, that have the potential to have a knock-on effect, right? What's the person that has exposure to that that's now going to default on their loans, causing other people to default on theirs? And that was kind of the cascade we saw in the financial crisis that was such a big concern. Now, again, I think, you know, you talk about what China has done really the last few months to kind of solidify their positions on so many of these issues. And I think it should make U.S. investors a little bit more nervous about putting money in those kinds of investments outside the U.S., and in particular with China. And so I think, you know, we've had conversations with a number of portfolio managers where they're being more careful now than they ever have before about what their exposures look like. And I think, if anything, it's a healthy conversation to be having. It maybe isn't the reason why you want to have to think about it, right? You don't want to have to be forced into it because you have things being taken away from you. But if anything, to be more aware of the risks, to better price, you know, what kind of lending is going on, what kind of purchasing is going on, I think, you know, it's going to be helpful for investors. Of course, got to pay close attention to what the immediate effect is, but also then again, longer term, I think you get the benefit of, you know, having a better understanding of what the risk really is there.
To your point that you're making before, a lot of this comes down to contagion, you know, which we talked about in the past, where one large institution defaults on their loans, and the concerns is who is holding those loans, and now are they going to have a difficult ability to pay their own debts, or shareholders, and everybody begins pulling money because they don't know who holds what. Looking into, you know, the cap structure of Evergrande, it doesn't appear that there's many U.S. or European banks or holders of that debt, which is assuming a good sign that you wouldn't have concerns in the financial institution for those players. And most of the debt is actually owned by the construction companies that are doing the building on their behalf. So a lot of times, you know, Bob, a few years ago at the seminar, you talked about, you know, the first 100 highways you build, you have a high amount of productivity. The 1,000th highway you build, you're not gaining much in productivity. Well, the comparison might be the first 800 apartment buildings you build in, you know, a mid-tier city. You add quite a bit of ability to fill those, but the thousandth or the 2,000th apartment building you build, you don't have the people to fill those units, and that's what they're running into right now. But luckily, it doesn't appear that there's going to be contagion effects, but it always is something to keep an eye on and see if investors get spooked over that area of the market.
Thank you for that, Chris. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the program. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.